Hey, Jess here to talk to you about a new series I have created just for supporters of the Hashtag Am Writing podcast. I met an aspiring author and speaker who has an idea for a book that just knocked me over. I said, please, please write that book. This is someone who had an idea that it has a place in the market, it's timely, she's the perfect person to write it, and I asked her, I begged her if I could please mentor her through this process publicly on the podcast. So while we're not giving her full name and we're not giving the actual title of the book because we don't want to hand those things away, I am coaching her through the entire process from preparing her book proposal to querying an agent. I'm going through the whole thing with her. She knows nothing about the publishing industry. She knows very little about how, you know, one goes about writing a book. And so she essentially, this is, as I mentioned before, from soup to nuts, from authority to author. And hopefully we'll get her there. But really, whether or not this book ends up selling, whether this book, she ends up having a speaking career, this is about the process of preparing to do that. How do you write a book? How do you prepare to become a speaker on the back of that book? So I hope you join us. This is a series for supporters only. So if you are a free supporter or if you're a free subscriber right now, consider upgrading. Remember, if you upgrade, you'll also get access to the ability to submit for our First Pages book lab and lots of other fun stuff that we put out just for supporters. So come join us. It's a lot of fun.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Hey, welcome to the Hashtag Am Writing Podcast. This is the podcast about, writing all the things, the short things, the long things, the nonfiction, the fiction, the poetry, the book proposals, the agent queries, all the things. In reality, though, this podcast is about two things. It is about getting the work done and flattening the learning curve for other writers. I'm Jess Leahy. I am co-hosting today. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my journalism at the New York Times and the Washington Post and The Atlantic.
And I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of many romance novels. My next one is called Thrown for a Loop, and it's coming from Forever in November, and I could not be more excited. And it is in the vein of romance, publishing, and readership that I have invited a guest to talk to us today, because she has done something so outrageously cool that I needed to hear more in person. So please welcome Stephanie Pau, who has started Los Angeles's first romance book truck. So she's become a bookseller, and I am here to hear all about it. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. If you wouldn't mind, I would love to hear, how did this happen? Like, how did you decide that the world needed a book truck? Because that is just a cool idea and I never thought of it. And how did you decide to actually make it a thing? And what did you do?
Yes. Okay. The idea actually came to me. I live by the beach. So I was walking by the beach and I saw a vintage Volkswagen truck for sale. And I just couldn't get it out of my mind. It isn't the truck that I have now, but I kept thinking, what could I do with it? And I've always loved books and romance in particular. And I've been looking for something that I could do that kind of took my previous experience, which is marketing, but like melded it with something I really enjoyed. And I just thought maybe I could start a book truck. And I started to do research and I saw that there are many book trucks across the country. There are even, at the time, there was, I think, maybe just one or two romance ones. And I was lucky enough to be able to speak with someone who had a romance book bus called Trope. She has a bookshop now. And she really like gave me a lot of confidence that I could probably do this too. And I ended up taking a course on book selling and I started looking for a truck. And the truck I ended up finding was the first truck I found on Facebook Marketplace. And the man who was the seller, he had completely restored it. And he was so excited that I wanted to do this bookshop in a truck idea that he actually helped me in design all the shelves, and he built it and he didn't charge me for it. So it felt,
Oh
yeah. So it felt like very serendipitous and like almost meant to be. And now it's been like 2 months and I'm having so much fun.
Wow. Wow. Oh my goodness. I feel like you should be teaching a class in like how to live, right? You're like, I'm good at this thing, but I'm really interested in this other thing, and I'm gonna stick them together and it's gonna be great.
Yeah, I feel like it was a little bit of like manifesting, I guess.
Well, wow, that's so great. So, how many books does your truck hold at once? Like, what is the size of your store?
Yeah, so it holds about 350 books. And I've taken to also like stacking books on top to display like my favorite books. So I think it might hold almost 400.
Okay. And so, of course, when we think about the bookstores that we grew up going to, you know, there are these giant cavernous Barnes and Nobles, there are smaller independent bookstores, and they're all numbering in the thousands. But by specializing in a category that you really love, like suddenly 400 is, you know, it's a workable amount for what romance readers might be looking for in any given day. So, but still, there's a lot of good books in the world. How do you choose?
Yeah, I do a mix of like books that I've read and loved. I have been a voracious reader I've read my whole life, but I've been a voracious reader for a couple of years. And I also do a lot of like books that I get recommendations from friends or I just see that are like very popular online because I think people will want to find those. But I think it is hard. I'm still figuring out like the right balance of what types of romance to carry.
Right. Because we all have our favorite, you know, parts of the genre, and, you know, they might not be the ones that are killing it.
But the thing that I'm really excited to hear about is the thing that I love so much about independent booksellers is I get a sense for the bookseller when I go to the bookstore. Like there are certain bookstores I rave about, not necessarily because they're huge, not necessarily because they're beautiful, but because I can tell that when the bookseller recommends something to me that I know who that person is and I know the sense of the curation at the store, and that excites me because I feel like I'm in capable hands. So I'm really curious, especially to hear about your curation and how you decide, you know, what you're going to carry. And then I'm also, and I know Serena's going to ask this question, but in my head, I'm like, how do you find your readers? That's the part I'm so excited to hear about. Like, how do you know where to go? How do the people find you? Because I think that's the magic is connecting the people with the books. And that's what I feel like a really great curation does. It says, if you like this, try this. Or, oh, you're new to this genre? Let me tell you where you should start with this genre. That's what's magic to me about independent booksellers and the idea of you getting to do it on a very in a very concentrated way with a particular genre is just it makes me so happy. I'm just so happy you're out there doing this, Stephanie.
Thank
So
you.
one time, yeah, so one time I was reading the listing of like a literary agent, I think. And somebody had said, "What do you like about this job?" And the agent said, "I get to invest in my own taste." And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at her job, but also of your job as well. And before we get to how do you find the readers, because that is a really important chapter of this conversation, I just, from a listener standpoint, like, are you constantly deluged by authors who are like, pick me, pick me? Like, what would you tell an author who is trying to navigate the bookselling world? Like, what have you learned about your end of being a bookseller that an author might need to hear?
Yes. Okay. So I want to say like the curation part. My like number two bestseller is actually an indie author's book who I love, and I can see from the book selling like software that I use that that I'm the only bookstore of the 200 plus bookstores that carry her book, and it's the second bestseller for me. Like, I've sold over 30 copies in like 2 months. So I think it really is like the passion of the bookseller. And I have had quite a few authors reach out to me, and they'll come to events, and I feel like it's, I don't have a good process on how I'm vetting all the authors, but I think it's like if we make a personal connection, I will try to go out of my way to like read their book because we've connected in some way, and I love reading, and I just feel like because we've like either met in person or we've exchanged nice messages on social media, it does make me want to read someone's book more because I have that personal connection, which is probably how people feel when they go shop at an indie bookstore. They have the personal connection with like a bookseller. So I think that's very similar. I've had people like bring me their books, which does make it easier for me to like already have it ready. I don't have to look it up to read it or remember to look it up as well. But I know that like probably has a cost to it as well. But I had someone just bring me an F1 romance book yesterday at one of my pop-ups, and I've been on an F1 kick. I don't know if she noticed that from my personal social, but like I am very intrigued already, and now I have it.
That's so lovely.
For the listeners out there who are interested in this very specific topic, in our show notes, I'm going to link to an episode we did with Mary Laura Philpott, who used to be at Parnassus, about making connections with booksellers. Because there are things you can do to go out of your way before your book comes out, or when your book is coming out, to say, "Hey, I have this book coming out. Or would you be interested at all in getting a copy?" So it's something that can happen that authors can work on. And so I'm going to definitely drop the link to that episode in the show notes.
I had this earlier this year. I was noticing, I started keeping track of how many romance bookstores are in the world, and now I have a list of 60, more than 60. And for a little while, when one just sort of popped up in my social, I was writing an email, because authors get a lot of publisher copies, and sometimes after the launch of the book, we end up with a box of like 15 copies still sitting here. And I was sending an email like, "Congratulations on your new store. That's amazing. Can I send you a signed author copy? Because I just have them here. It's a gift." And the uptake of that is, almost 100%, but I don't ever want to presume that a bookseller wants a copy, unless I check first, because that just seems cheesy. It's hard for authors to know like how to be a good partner and not irritating. And anyway, I just thought, what your thoughts about that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, I am a new store and like a single person business. So, anyone that reaches out to me, I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what do you mean? Like, how do you know about me? Like, why would you want to send me something?" So, I'm sure like the like wariness goes both ways, where we're also a lot of people are like women or maybe like not used to promoting themselves more. So I think like just shoot your shot. I have an event coming up at like a big like kind of mall, and they said they don't really do things like that with partners like this, but they were impressed that I shot my shot. So I have like a summer series with them, and I think it's the same for like promoting your own book.
Yeah, I guess this whole conversation is an exercise in trying.
Yeah, like the worst that could happen is I think probably they would maybe say no or not respond to your request, which
Right.
I do feel like I am guilty of that because I get a lot and I don't know how to best like manage the flow of people saying that they want to send books, but that isn't because I don't want to reply. It's more like I don't have a good system.
It's hard. So, I definitely want to hear how you figure out where to go. Like, where does the truck go? How do you know who to ask? Like, is that a lot of asking and hoping for the best as well? Like, how does it come together?
Yeah, that has been a trial and error process. I think I started off applying to more markets because they're looking for vendors anyways, but those usually have costs. And I found a few markets that I really enjoy going to, so I go to them like monthly now. And
What kind of markets, can I ask?
yeah, they're like one is like a night market. They do it like a couple times a month in a city of LA called Lakewood. And there's like food. There's usually like a theme. So like there was an AAPI night, or they had, I don't know if you know those like toys called Labubu, but the last event I did was a Labubu themed one. And then I do another market that is in Culver City, and it is similar. Like there's food and drinks, and then there's like people selling different, like a lot of artisan made things.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I reach out to local businesses as well. And I found like right away, I reached out to so many and I didn't hear back from that many because I was just starting out. I didn't have that many followers at the time. But the people who I found and I did pop-ups at, they were so kind and they let me dictate like a day where I come back monthly. So I just have like places that I will go monthly, which makes it a lot easier to like have a like a set schedule. And then I just try to test new places and add on.
Like what kind of business? What makes a good, what's a good sort of connection?
Yeah, well, so the first place that said yes to me is another women-owned business, and I do feel like
Okay.
they are like more inclined to like take a chance on another woman-owned business. So she actually has a flower shop and she does like high tea on the days that I go. So she has people
Oh,
going
cool.
there for like high tea. But it's on a very visible street. It's on the Pacific Coast Highway. So I think it's, I'm not sure it's benefiting her in any way because I'm not sure my customers are going to buy flowers. But she has a space for me to pop up and it doesn't like detract from her business and it adds something fun to her guests. And I also go to coffee shops and breweries, and I do want to start reaching out to restaurants as well.
I'm actually looking at her pop-up schedule on her site right now. And there's also, I wouldn't have even occurred to me, but these silent readings that I see every once in a while on social media that I'm like, oh, if I lived in a city, I would be going to those all the time, where people just get together to read together. I've also seen them people getting together just to write together. And those, that's brilliant. Showing up for something like that is such a wonderful idea. And your pop-up schedule looks fantastic. Fantastic. I'll definitely be dropping that into the show notes as well.
Well, I just want to push back on the idea that the flower shop isn't getting anything out of you stopping there because, like, so she runs a flower shop. I'm certain she has a tiny core number of people who come every week and get fresh flowers because, you know, money is no object and why not? But then there are other people who are on her list, maybe, who are only there when it's somebody's birthday 3 times a year. But if you're coming on a certain day and she can tell her following, you know, that, oh, stop by on Tuesday because La Floria is going to be here and it's, you know, the romance book truck, and you definitely want to check it out. It gives her a timely thing. She can tell the people that do like flowers, and you know, she's gonna maybe have more foot traffic on that day than she otherwise might not have had.
Yeah, I think it's more maybe imposter syndrome because she has like 800,000 followers. So I'm like, oh, I am like
Wow.
a drop in your little bucket.
Wow. Yeah, maybe we should all be in the flower business.
Yeah.
Well, what did you have to sort of overcome with your own resistance in order to try this new thing? Because when writers have the same problem, we have an idea, it's a little glimmer, a sparkle of an idea. It's so appealing in our minds, but like the commitment to actually like set aside 6 months of your life and write an entire book because you had this glimmer of an idea is a process. And that is why there aren't as many people who write complete books as who have ideas for them. So how did you convince yourself that that this risky thing was something you ought to commit to, and how did you make that decision?
Yeah, I think I'm still convincing myself that.
Okay, fair, yeah, fair.
I think it's really hard because I think we're really programmed, or at least I was, on like this typical metrics of success, which is like go to college, get a job, keep climbing the corporate ladder. And so I just kind of thought I would be doing that my whole life. But I never once thought, like, does that make me happy? Like, I was in a marketing job and I was like, I climbed up to like VP, but I didn't enjoy it at all. And I just thought that's what we were supposed to do. So I think for me, I have been freelancing for 3 years because I got really burnt out. And I've just slowly come to terms with like maybe what I build for myself or what I want for my life is different than what all my friends have, because I still talk to my friends that I've had for a long time and I don't think they understand what I'm doing. And I feel like you will get a lot of resistance from people that you know, because they just want you to do the thing that feels safe to them, which is not venturing and doing something completely unknown. So I think it's like being really comfortable with the idea yourself, and that not everyone's going to get it, but that's okay, because the people who do will like really support you. And then of course, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, is like a big financial risk. I think if you're setting aside time to write and not doing like other work, like it is a risk either way. So I am lucky enough to have support. And I think that's like really important to share, that like my parents supported me so that I could take this on. And I started taking less and less clients from my like freelancing work to prepare to do this. And like, I am still not like super profitable, but I know that I can like push back into freelancing if I really need to. So I think I'm comfortable knowing that there are other means of like income if I really need it, but I really want to give myself time to see where this goes.
Right. I love that. So of course you knew that freelancing was, that you had some connections there, which helps. So you have like a little bit of a cushion for yourself, which is amazing. You mentioned earlier that you took a course in bookselling, and I just wonder how you found that, and how you felt. Was it information that you already had? Did it just give you confidence, or did you really learn a lot from that course?
Well, I found it through the American Booksellers Association. It was like a linked course that they had on like how to get started with opening your own bookstore. And I did learn a lot. I think at the time I was really debating, should I do a bookstore or should I do something more mobile? And that course actually made me feel like, when we did all the calculations, the rent is so much in LA that it just seemed like much, much too risky to do a store first, like maybe like building up a customer base before investing in a shop. So I think I did learn a lot. I get a lot of the same questions for people who want to start something similar. And I got all of that information through this course. Like, a lot of people ask me, like, where do you buy books from? And things that have to do with book selling that aren't very like well known. And I think the course like provides that information.
Nice. Do you use Ingram? And so you have like a special account as a bookseller?
Yes. And I just started opening like accounts with the publishers because I wasn't sure how much I was going to order. And you have to meet minimums to order through the publishers. And I was like, I don't know how quickly my inventory is going to go. Right. But now I think it will be more worth it because you get a better like discount through the publishers.
As someone who's not involved in the bookselling community or the independent publishing community, just for my knowledge, One of the things that I, you know, often lament is if I like an author that is an independent bookseller and their print books are hard to come by, is Ingram someone who helps you bridge that? Does Ingram do this like print on demand? Sorry, there, my husband's home. Could you explain how this works a little bit to me?
So I also am not 100% sure, but yes, Ingram does the print on demand books and they have books from a lot of independent authors on there. I have a friend who is an indie author and she said that she first listed her book on Amazon, but then the bookstores couldn't buy it. So she had to do something to get it on Ingram. So I'm not sure how that works, but I've also bought directly from a few authors, like the author I mentioned, who is like my second bestseller. I buy directly from her. And I'm not sure where she gets her copies, but it is a much better deal than through Ingram.
Yeah, so Ingram, their first and primary business was as a wholesaler for traditionally published books. So, you know, in the 90s when I briefly worked at Random House, Ingram was, you know, when a new book is published, Ingram buys a certain amount of them and Baker and Taylor buy a certain amount of them, and they stand as a middleman who is ready to wholesale those books to booksellers. And then, of course, they created their print-on-demand service so that probably when you log into Ingram, you can see indie titles and traditional titles sort of all together in their offered database. But I did learn something recently about indies and Ingram that was a real eye-opener for me, which is that an author who opens an Ingram Spark account and uploads their files there, like indie author that you buy from probably does, has to set a discount amount. And unfortunately, the number that the bookseller gets is not the same as what the author sets. So the author can set a discount to retail of in a band between, I don't know, 40 and 60 or something like that. But in order for a bookseller to get their maximum discount, I have to put 53% discount or greater, like 53 or 55. And if I put 52 instead, then the bookseller gets often a very bad discount that is not 52%. It's more like 30%. So there's this magic that happens at the 53% author discount that allows you and your colleagues to get the max discount in your Ingram account. And it took me only like 8 years to learn this magic. So
and Stephanie, this is why we keep Serena around, because she knows how this stuff works.
I figured there was something, because the range in discounts I see from indie authors is so wide, from like 20 to 40%. And at 20%, it's almost not even worth it to carry.
Right. I bet it isn't.
Yeah.
So and that's where the confusion comes in, because here's an author and she's putting 45% in that box, and then you're seeing it at 20 and going, this isn't worth it. And of course, like, both of you could be frustrated because
exactly.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, but I have learned that 53 is the magic number, and that if an author puts 53 in, then you will get your max discount. And it took me way, way too long to understand this.
This is like, so this random. These little random things that come up occasionally are, you know, why I talk about flattening the learning curve for other authors or booksellers or whomever that listen to this podcast, because how on earth would you know that? And then you're frustrated because you can't carry a book because you can't make money on it. The author's incredibly frustrated because you won't carry the book. And then that piece of information never gets across. So thank you for diving into that dorky detail for me, because again, I think that's such an important piece of information that no one would ever know unless someone somewhere is discussing it. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's really inside baseball, like picky junk that takes up my week, but here we
are.
Yes,
I know, but the people who listen to this podcast, in particular the people who are fans of Serena Bowen, are often people who are also writing within the indie space, and so how are they going to find this stuff out?
Well, okay.
Okay.
Even if it's not as, you know, as joyful as the following your dreams and the flower shop stuff, but we're here to do all of it.
Well, but this is also a big part of it, because there are also going to be people out there who are like, oh, I don't want to open a brick and mortar store, but oh, a truck. That, I mean, like for me, that's the entry point that's very, very exciting to me. So the other reason I wanted to be on this podcast today is because I want to understand how that works. And is it a way into something that would really feed your soul and your heart, and not to mention your your bookshelves?
Of course. So, Stephanie, before we go, I would love, since you're the expert here, I would love for you to recommend a couple romances that you're excited about right now. And if you wouldn't mind, I would be super thrilled to hear what your number two bestseller is that you are her best bookseller.
Yeah. Okay. It's Yes, No, Maybe by Jessica Sherry. And it is a story of a woman who has scars on her face from like an accident from when she was younger, and she's like always felt not worthy of like all the good things in life, and she's settling, and she moves next door to a romance writer who has writer's block, and she becomes basically his muse, and it's like very sweet but very emotional. Some other books I love. I recently finished Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid, and I've never cried so hard in a book. And it's like also such a beautiful love story. I like get chills thinking about it.
Wow.
And then just like a favorite that I always recommend is All Roads Lead Here by Mariana Zapata. I'm in my late 30s, so I feel like I love when characters are in their 30s and still figuring things out. And I love a slow burn romance.
All right. Thank you so much. I love those choices. We've all walked into bookstores and seen like the same five books on the front table that we've seen in every other bookstore we've walked into that month. And it's really lovely to hear some different recommendations from you. And we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today to talk about this super fun project that Jess and I are like, ooh, we could just quit everything and get a truck.
Well, the other thing is, I'm like, okay, when's my next speaking engagement in Los Angeles, and can I make it coincide with one of your pop-up dates so that I could come by?
I will drive the truck to you.
That actually, we'll figure it out, because I'm dying to see your truck, dying to see how it works. I'm loving the selections, and I'm just really happy for, I'm more than anything else, I'm really happy for someone who has found a way to turn something they love into a business that can work. So I'm just so happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
It was entirely our pleasure. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again to the Am Writing Podcast. And until next week, keep your heads in the game and your butts in the chair.
The Hashtag Am Writing Podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output, because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.